This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. I'm your host, Darren Tun, and with me is my co-host, Mike Messina.
Hello.
Today, we have Todor Lazarov. He is also known as Juji, as his friends call him. Todor is known for his stunt work on Hellboy, Game of Thrones, Expendable 2, and most recently, RRR, as an action director, which actually won a Golden Globe recently and is also now nominated for an Oscar. Mike, what are some big takeaways from this episode?
Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing about how all of those action set pieces involving animals for RRR came to be and how they were able to simulate those animals. So, for example, that opening beam sequence when he has to tame a tiger as his character intro. Of course, the tiger itself was not real, but they had pretty much the next best thing for reference on set, which was having a live wolf for the chase scenes. And then later on, they also had a human basketball player come on set to simulate the tiger for a later part of the sequence. And then you'll also hear in part two how they were using RC cars with flagpoles on top of it to sort of simulate having animals running around for the action fight scene at the governor's mansion.
Dude, I can't believe that wasn't a real tiger.
I know, it all looks so good. And they even have the leaves moving on the ground and everything.
Yeah,
very good, very good.
Yeah, for me in particular, I really enjoyed the Ram Police Riot intro sequence. I know Juji did a lot of the action camera work for that sequence, especially the stuff in the crowd and the kinetic movement. It really looked as crazy as it actually was on that day. So a lot of you guys watching it, like the first time I saw it, I was like, damn, there's no way there's really that many people. It's not really that crazy. They had to have CGI'd something, right? But he tells us that it really is that crazy. There were tons of people pushing him around. He had no room to move. And they had to call cut with a giant megaphone, right? Is that what he said?
Yeah, a megaphone or sound system, something like that. And then even then, it's not like everyone just stops. People are still going at it in the crowd.
Right, because everyone's yelling and like the set is like chaotic. And I remember there's also fire in that sequence too. So that must have been crazy to coordinate, having that many people, a guy on fire running through, right?
Yeah, good camera work, good costume and set design all around to keep it legible.
Yeah, and one of my favorite parts of that sequence was the dog pile sequence where he's like covered in all those people and he has to break free with those like finger breaks. I just thought that was so creative. I haven't seen that in any film before. But yeah, without further ado, here is Todor Lazarov.
Juji, then, it's great having you on the podcast. I know it's been a long time coming, but we finally made it happen. You were just about to tell us the origin of your nickname. Where did that come from?
So thank you for inviting me in your podcast. Thank you so much for that. So when I was when I started, that was like 1998 or 1999. I don't remember. It was like very long time ago, like 24, 5 years ago. I was very tiny guy, a very little one. Like a dwarf, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was like I was like 52 kilos and I was like 155, 160. Now I'm very tall guy. It's good that you cannot see me, but now I'm 172.
we go by feet, inches, right? So how much is that?
Like 5'7".
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And and I'm now 75 kilos, only muscles,
but all muscle.
All muscle. So that time I was very tiny, and the dwarf Bulgarian means juge. Juge, it's like English version, it's dwarf. So because I was a small kid, so they start calling me dwarf.
Oh, really?
That's how. So juji means dwarf.
Yeah. And it just stuck with you since.
It stuck with me. I love my nickname. Everyone knows me as a Juji. So I said, I will never change it.
Yeah. It's easy to say, easy to pronounce as well. Yeah. Great nickname.
It is. Actually, it is. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we wanted to start out with some general questions. We saw there was like a mini documentary on you. It was like a Zero to Hero series we saw. If you could tell us a little bit about your story and how you started.
Okay, nice. Thank you for watching From Zero to Hero. I'm still a zero because if we think we are heroes, we are, you know, we are done. I coming from a very small village called Poleto. And it's like about 500-600 people lives there.
Mm.
And I always, when I was a kid, I always thought I will live in my village. I will stay there. I will do whatever. There was a mine nearby my village. So I thought I will be a miner, as my father was. So, but then one day, one morning, September 15th, in the morning, my father woke me up and he was like, you're going to the big city. You're going to the capital. You're going to Sofia. I was like, what? I was like 13 years old. And he was like, no, you're going to Sofia. You study there. You do school. You do some sports. I used to do soccer.
Mm.
So I was good. Let's not say very good. I was good.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons my father to bring me to the big city, to Sofia.
Mm-hmm.
But then one day I just went to one judo hall. So I fell in love with judo and sambo. And on the next day I went to the coach and I asked, can I try?
Mm.
And he was like, yes, of course. Why not? So since then I just, from soccer player, I went straight to judoka. And that's how everything starts.
Awesome.
Gotcha. Yeah, and we're hearing a lot about sambo now with the UFC and with Khabib rising up and everything in the past couple of years. And there's Islam as well now. And then I also saw there was some stuff about you and opera and theater and everything. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Is that right?
So, yes, because as you guys know, the stuntmen are always like they taking the risk, right?
Yeah.
Always.
All
in
the time.
Life, I'm the same. Mm-hmm. I'm the same. In life, I'm the same. Doesn't matter front of the camera or somewhere, I'm always like taking the risks. Doesn't matter if I know anything about it or if I don't, because this is something that I really don't know. I was just like my friend. He used to be a singer, an opera singer.
Oh wow!
And we became very good friends. And one day he called me on the phone and he was like, brother, I have one idea. It's already staying in my head for 5-6 years. And I need someone who can find me some producer to produce my opera show. And I was like, tell me more about it. And he started telling me about the story, what exactly he wants to do with the opera, because it's not exactly opera. It's an opera show. It's different. He explained me a little bit. He sent me the script. And I read the script because it was very, very short one. And I was like, okay, I will do it. I will be your producer. I never thought I would be a producer for an opera show.
Yeah.
I was like, and the problem was when I start, I was like, I realized that I don't know anything about opera.
Mm-hmm.
Then I start study about it. And then during the COVID, it was very hard to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everyone knows that.
Performance.
It's
yeah.
like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you cannot perform. You cannot bring people in the arena. Nothing. And for 2 years, I've been trying. We've been waiting, of course. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, last year, December 19, we did it in Bulgaria.
That's amazing.
Oh, it was, I mean, it was so hard, especially during the COVID. It was so hard. People were afraid to go into the arena,
you know,
to sit down and just... Actually, Bulgarians are a little crazy, so they're not that
they're all
scary
risk-takers.
About this.
Yeah.
That's like, for them, the restrictions are always been like, for me also, I mean, during COVID, we never closed the restaurants or doesn't matter. Even there were there were restrictions that you should shut down all the restaurants. Half of the restaurants were working like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and so, and at the end,
we did it,
and the show, the opera show was successful, very successful.
Good turnout.
And And yes, it's turned out very successful. And then now, just like 2 weeks ago, we did it in Kuwait.
Oh, wow.
And we just we blow the roofs over there. People loves it. People loves it. Even now we're talking about again to go maybe to Kuwait, but also we're negotiating with Dubai. Because it's different than the, like, if you, everyone knows what opera is, but this is a little different, a little more like a show. We have a ballet, dancing. We have so many other things. We have multimedia on the back, like crazy multimedia. And it's just like a 3D, because on the back is the multimedia, at the front, the real actors, you know, the real artists are at the front. So it's something like this.
I was just wondering, that's like the main difference between a regular opera and an opera show, right? Is like have all those other things going on. But when you said you were reading the script, was that like one of the main things that stood out to you? Like the fact that there are all these other elements to it other than just the opera?
That's the thing. That was my turning point, because I was like, I like opera. I know what opera means, but I might not go in to buy a ticket and go for opera. But once I just read the script, I was like, okay, I'm interested. I want to go and see it. That was one of the reasons to say, yes, let's do this. Let's go for it.
Damn, awesome. It sounds like it's paying off. Sounds like it's going well. Are you still involved now, right?
Brother, 10 years.
He's in this.
I'm in this. I'm not going out. It's just time to be successful.
Yeah.
Nice. And I also, as we were looking at your Instagram, we saw all the stuff about the opera. Also saw you talking about at one point how a lot of Bulgarian action filmmakers or action stunt performers are often more specialized than some other folks in the action industry. Can you talk a little bit about that, or maybe what you feel like you specialize in?
I saw there was one interview I gave for a friend of mine. About who can get into the industry, right? Is it this one?
It was a graphic, with some advice. So it
might
have been
okay. Yeah. Yes, it is this one. For me, stunt industry, more or less, especially in Bulgaria, and not only in Bulgaria, most of the countries in Europe are like more close. It's not like everyone can get into the industry. Of course, there is sometimes someone very lucky can get into this without knowing someone, without having too much experience with martial arts or something. It's very rare. But for example, for me, that industry should be involved with people like, you know, for example, most of the time stunt coordinators decide who to come, right? For some movie. And it's easier, and it's more like, how to say, if I know these guys who are involved in this particular whatever movie or some scene, like action scene or something, I will feel more comfortable. That doesn't mean I'm not gonna pick up some guy who is very talented in the gym or whatever, he is Taekwondo guy or something. That's, of course, if he's a talented guy, of course I will try to do something with him. But most of the time, what is happening, it's always someone says someone to someone with someone, brings someone, knows somebody else. And it's like, almost I'm sure that 90% of the industry works like this all around the world. If someone says it's not like this, liars. But yeah, I think it's like, for me, easier if I call someone and I know.
Right.
Yeah, and you trust them.
And it's all about trust. Of course, you know, it's many times we risk our lives. So you need to trust people who are around you, who are surrounded by you. If I don't know some of the people, how I will be trust them, how I can be 100% sure that these guys can stand right next to you.
So when you're looking for people, are you looking for people that know something specific? Like a specific skill, like swords, horses, something like that? Or are you kind of looking generally, like if they're a good stunt performer?
For me, most of the guys who are good with performing, they can do swords, they can do fights. Of course, if I need someone for horses, I will look for someone who works with horses, because for me, this is very, very hard. I've been mm-hmm. doing that for 25 years with horses. I've been working with horses mm-hmm. a lot. So I know how much time you need to become good on horse mm-hmm. and do some stuff on horse. So for horse scenes, definitely I will look for someone who is
specialized.
Yeah. Yes, who is specialized for sure. But for action and for whatever, front of camera, most of the time I'm looking for a good performer. Even if he's not that good with martial arts, he has to be a good performer.
Mm.
You are front of camera. It's a movie. You always can cheat a little bit. You always can lie a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you are not good performers, you cannot sell what you need to sell it. Mm-hmm. Just like if you don't know where exactly to stand front of the camera or side of the camera or front of the actor or doing something or helping the actor to look good, doesn't matter how good you are with martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not good performer, I don't think it's going to work that well. It's going to work, but not that well.
Yeah. Is there a base martial art that you see a lot of like stunt performers starting in?
So because I'm judoka, of course, I will say judo. But I can recognize a lot of taekwondo. Taekwondo, it's all right. Over the
kicks
world, actually.
And whatnot. Yeah,
kicks and all these things. I think maybe taekwondo, karate, they're more like they just like getting over the rest of the martial arts.
Mm.
And gymnasts also, because gymnasts are... I think martial arts, taekwondo and karate, it's more like convenient.
Definitely.
Ако може да те попитам нещо, то щеше да е... Какво е любовта за теб?
Ако трябва да я опиша с една дума, тя е...
Yeah, talking about like your opera work and the other stuff you did outside of RRR, we also saw you have a project called Timeless that we wanted you to talk about, because I know it's been racking up a lot of awards. It's been doing very well, and it's probably been like one of the first things you've directed. So just hearing more about that and your involvement.
So this idea, it was like, it came long, very long time ago. And I was like, always wanted to do something. I always wanted to do my directing debut. And last year, there was one film festival here in Bulgaria. And a friend of mine, actually the same guy who is the author and the director of the opera show, my dear friend, he just pushed me to do this. He knew about my idea that I want to do a short movie, my debut as a director. And he just pushed me and he was like, you have to do it. You have to do it for this festival because this festival is really nice, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay, I will do it. Then I shot the movie for 2 days and a half, like 15 minutes for two days and a half. And then, it was very quick. And also because I late a little bit, I edit for whole night because on the next day I should have sent it to the festival. I showed it.
Nice, nice.
It's like a 48-hour film festival here.
It's like something like this became something like this. And like for 72 hours, we were ready and I just sent it to the festival.
Wow.
And then they called me for the festival and I went and I won the biggest prize, like the Grand Prix. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? I was like, I just did it because my friend pushed me, right?
He seems like a good friend.
Yeah.
He is. and I was like, what the hell? I was like, okay, good. Good to know that I won. But it's like first festival for win. And I was like, nice. And then I sent it to a friend of mine who is a director.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lot of scripts written and he's a very, very good here in Bulgaria. And I sent it to him. I wanted opinion from him. And he was like, brother, this one is for festivals. Let's start to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, are you kidding me? Really? I wasn't so confident about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no. Just I will start sending it. And he asked me to choose some of the festivals. So I chose some, like, because I really love Asia, all about Asia. Maybe because of judo, maybe because of, I don't know. It's just like, for me, Asia is like, beautiful, beautiful, everything. I love everything about it. So I start choosing like festivals all around Asia, even India. So India, Korea, Japan. And they start selecting me. Wow. I was like, wow, yeah. And I was so surprised when they select me for a Tokyo Liftoff Festival. I was like, what the hell? And then for Korean, but that was, I was selected and I also was nominated, but it was 2021, the end. And they canceled the festival because of COVID.
Mm.
So, and all movies, but I still have the record of the festival. So it was nice. And then I start winning some awards. I was like, okay, I might did something not so bad.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
So do you have any plans for distribution or is there any way for folks to see it at some point?
That's what I was wondering.
That's the thing. Yeah. I don't have the confidence that I did something good. So.
Yeah, the awards are the confidence, though. You don't need it.
Yeah.
Other people did that part for you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I'm still ready.
Okay.
But for sure, because I have a few more festivals, and then next year I'll just release it on... It's going to be on Instagram, because it's only 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So
we'll be looking out for that one.
Yeah, for sure.
I will send it to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would really love to see it. I'm very curious. There's, you know, one or two clips I saw. I think there was a music award that y'all got.
Yes,
and we were able to see a shot or two from that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a story about one man and a horse. Mm-hmm. And about friendship, about how we lost the connection with nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something like this.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
And that sounds like it ties back to your background with horses as well. It seems like something you're very comfortable with. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Darren, do we want to segue into RRR a little bit?
I did want to do that. I know we didn't get a touch on, I know your judo background. I wanted to touch briefly on it before we jumped into the film analysis. But yeah. If you could speak just briefly about your judo background. I know you teach and you run a club. All right, you're a part of a club. What does that mean to you, and how did you start?
So first of all, the club with the kids and everything, it's a happiness. You know, that's the most precious things, because to work with kids, play with kids, teach them, I think it's the most valuable things now in these days.
Mm-hmm.
To give that, I don't know how to say, you're leaving something from you to them, mm-hmm. definitely. So that's what the coaching means to me. But the my background started 1992 or 3 with sambo.
Mm-hmm.
So sambo and judo. That time there was a sambo and judo. They were like each club. We were learning sambo and judo. After like 10, 12, 15 years after that, they separate, and now we have only judo clubs, we have sambo clubs, there is no not anymore, not together.
Yeah.
So that time when I start, there was a sambo and judo in same club, and I start very good. Second year of since I start playing sambo, I went into the national team, so I spent 10 years in the national team. Of course I have like 15 national championships I won. Third place of world championship, third place of European championship, a lot of international competitions I won. So that's the short version of the story about it.
Short version, just 15 titles, 15 tours.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy.
And 10 years in the national team. It was a beautiful time. It was a great time, actually.
That's awesome.
For me, sports can save you.
Mm-hmm. How so?
You know, during when we were kids, that time here in Bulgaria, 90s, it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of gunfiring on the streets, fights all over, you know, a lot of drugs, saving you from the street. That time, mm-hmm. a lot of my friends and my age guys, mm-hmm. they stayed on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
They die on the streets. There was mm-hmm. a few friends of mine, they die on the stupid bench because of that.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because of the drugs and all these things. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm sad, like, I wasn't into the drugs or something, but saved me from the street. Mm. Because that time I was by myself here in the big city, away from my family, from my father, my mother, my parents. There was no iPhones. There is no phones, nothing. Right. Mm-hmm. And they don't know what's going on with you. They just every Sunday, buy on the train, and then I coming to Sofia, and then for the whole week, I can do whatever I want. That mm-hmm. time, teenager, but I was in the gym. I was mm-hmm. I was training. I was in the dojo.
Yeah, so it gives you something to work for.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and so with that, wanted to jump in a little bit to this film here, RRR, which some folks might have heard of if you're a fan of this podcast. Can you just talk a little bit about what it was like being a part of the movie and maybe what the process was like with you as a second unit director here?
Amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah.
Trust me. First time when I went to India, because I always loved India. I don't know why. Mm. Probably because my mom watching so much Indian TV shows.
Yeah.
You know? And I grow up with a lot of Indian influences. So 2017, when I went for first time in India, I fell in love with everything. Of course, it's like the smell, the dirt, all these things are not common for Europe, for us, for, you know. But after a few days, you get used to this. But people are so humble, so nice, so, like, they are different. They're mm-hmm. so different. And I just fell in love with people in India. And then I was like, I started turning off so many movies here in Europe, Netflix, Hollywood, whatever. I was like, no. I want to go and work in India. That's it. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2018, I was in London for 2 weeks. And the producer for RRR called me. And he was like, hey, Juji, there is a friend of mine. He gave me your number. He says that you are good with horses. Can you come to India for one movie and help us with the horses? And it was November, 2018, November. They just start. Because they start 2018, November. And I was like, yes, of course, I can come. Just let me know when. And I thought it's like December or January, right? And he was like, next week. I was like, well, how come now next week is like 8th of November? And it was only 2nd of November. After 6 days, I need to travel to India. And I was like, I'm so sorry, but it's not possible because I have a few more days in London, and then I need to go back. I need to get my visa and everything. He was like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I really wanted to join our team. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know it who are they that time. And then I came back home. Of course, I told him to call one friend of mine from Slovakia. He called him, and then he went. He helped them. He did the job. He finished the job, so everything was perfect. And then January, the same producer called me again. Hey, hi, Juji. I want to ask you a question. Do you know someone good with action as an action camera operator? I was like, of course, I know a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends who are very good with the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, can you please help us? And if you can find someone and he's willing to come to India for 6 days, for 10 days to do one sequence. I was like, of course I will. And I call a few guys, but everyone was busy.
Wow.
And then I call Kurt. Kurt is the producer. And I called him and I was like, I'm so sorry, but everyone is busy, so no one can come. And I was like, can you come? He was like, I know you're working as action director, but can you come as a camera operator, as action camera? I was like, let me think about it. Because I've been loved to work with camera, so I've been doing some stuff. And I was like, let me think about it. And he was like, okay, I'll give you like 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I was talking with him like, let's say Monday morning, Monday night, same day, he called me and he gave me 2 days to think about it. And he called me and I, no, you have to come. I was like, hey, Maya, you told me 2 days, I have time. He was like, no.
Wow.
You should tell me now. And I was like, okay, I'll come. He was like, and I asked him again, for how long? 6, 10 days. And he was like, yes, around 10 days. I was like, okay, then 10 days, I'll come and help. I went there, I met the director, and it turned out that that's the most successful director in India,
mm-hmm.
Rajamouli sir.
I know him,
I know his name, I know everything about him because of Bahubali. Bahubali was the most successful movie in India. Now it's RRR, but still, mm-hmm. Bahubali is still the... Well, doesn't matter where you go in India, everyone knows about Bahubali. Everyone knows about it and about the actor, Prabhas. So I went, I met the director, I spoke with him. It was all nice, so humble, great. And we talk, and he was like, Juji, we want here something like... He started explaining me about the sequence, what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, guys, give me a camera and let's do it. They asked me what kind of camera. I was like, whatever you have, some red or mini or whatever, something small, mm-hmm. so I can be...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They bring me red... Yeah. They bring me Red Dragon, so it was Red Dragon. Okay. And then, and then we start shooting. But the thing was, I wasn't prepared for this at all.
Mm.
It was like a 1,000 crowd, like a lot of extras, between 500 and 1,000 almost every day.
My God.
And I'm inside of this crowd with the camera.
Handheld.
And the people behind, handheld, yeah. Wow. And people behind me, they are not on camera, but they're pushing me. And they're like, that was one time experience. Oh my God, it was crazy. And then maybe they like me. And the DOP was so nice. Also, the whole crew, the whole team of RRR was just great.
Yeah.
And then... they liked me, the DOP and the director, they liked me, and I stayed for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And we shot what we supposed to do. They were so happy. And then, sometimes there was for 1 week, I was leaving the set every day, and I was saying to everyone, bye, guys, because every day I was going home, the sixth week.
Mm-hmm.
And every day they were like, okay, can you stay? Two more days. And then I was like, okay, guys. And then two more days.
So it's like, bye. And, hi.
Yeah. And that's how it was. That's how it was. And they really liked me then after that, right? So I finally finished with my work and I came back home in Bulgaria. And it was like less than 2 weeks. The producer called me again. Hi, Juji, we have a big sequence here. I need a lot of foreigners. I need an action director. I need this. I need that.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I will find someone. No, we want you. I was like, okay, so, but tell me that is not next week.
Yeah.
He was like, no, you have time. You have time. Because I asked him how many guys I need to bring with me. He was like, around 40, 50 guys. I was like, 40, 50 foreigners, that's not that easy to find.
Yeah.
At the end, okay, I found for a week. I've been calling friends. Blah, blah, they helped me, of course. And then we went again.
Mm-hmm.
I went again.
Yeah.
With 40 guys. Mm-hmm. We did the crazy sequence with the animals, where the animals coming out of the
cage, the truck,
the truck. Yeah. So over there, we did all this stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the action, it's not on the movie, actually. We did so much.
So there's a lot of shots that wasn't even included.
It wasn't included.
Oh, my God.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. We did so much, so much. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be back and forth from the beginning until the end of the movie. Until the end. Always they've been calling me. Always I've been going there. If I cannot, I send them guys to them. And we built a really nice relationship with the producer, with the director, with most of the crew over there. Wow. It was like, I even went for the premiere in India.
That's great.
They invite me. This was amazing. Mind-blowing.
I can only imagine.
My God. There was they're giving you a bags with papers.
Oh wow!
And all the time they throwing papers in the air.
Was this the biggest premiere you've been to?
In India, yes.
Wow.
And that was like, oh my God! It was totally different than the premieres in all around, because I'm being on premiere in London in the blues. That time was blue carpet, the red carpet. So I've been in some big premieres, huge. But this one was totally different. And it was like crazy experience. Oh my God.
Wow. How was it different, would you say, than what you're used to?
First of all, outside of the theater, it's like a war. A firework, people shouting, people are with... So there was a two fan zones. One is from the one side of the actor, the other one's the other side of the actor. One is for the Ram Charan, the other one's for NTR. And they're like, I don't know, it's something, it's crazy, because there is a flex with their faces, with they shouting, screaming their names.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. The theater was like 700, inside was 700 people. Outside, probably there were 7,000 people.
My God.
It was crazy.
Just, that's insane.
Oh my God. Wow. And
I can't even imagine what it was like to be there.
I'm waiting for the next premiere for next movie. I'm going there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one I need to see in theaters at some point.
Exactly. That's just the premiere movie, right? Yeah.
Just the premiere movie. Yeah. Oh my God.
If you're a fan of the show, then we have something in common. Not only are we obsessed with action films, we're obsessed with being the best action filmmakers we can be.
So we wanted to give a quick shout out to a great resource for growing your filmmaker toolkit, and this episode's sponsor, Skillshare.
Skillshare is an online learning platform with thousands of creative courses and classes taught by experts to help you learn new skills.
These courses cover so many film topics, from directing to acting to screenwriting, and even things like marketing and graphic design. There's even a course that teaches you practical skills needed for a director to stage stunts.
Get 30% off your annual subscription by following the link in this episode description, or check out the link in our Instagram bio at Action Filmmaking Podcast.
Now, back to the show.
I was wondering, so you said you started as a action cinematographer, but you moved on to doing so much more on set, like action directing and like bringing on other stunt people, like your own guys. Yeah, what was that like initially when you were action cinematographer? Like, you worked with the DOP and the director. Did they give you like a lot of creative freedom when it comes to camera work? Because I know like director of photography, they like to sometimes do like their own stuff and then maybe hand off to action directors occasionally. How does that work normally, that dynamic?
That's the reason I really love these two guys. I really love Rajamouli sir and Sethi sir. They are amazing because they give me a freedom that sometimes even, I don't know, sometimes even some close friend of mine cannot, we're not going to give me this.
Yeah.
They just told me, okay, you do whatever you feel. If we, of course, if they don't like it, they'll say, no, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But they give me the freedom, and I was doing whatever I feel. It's like from action perspective, whatever is feel good for me. And then of course I've been talking a lot of times with the director about his thoughts. Of course, I always getting his thoughts about the sequence, and then I bring in my thoughts, and then we meeting always in the middle, or sometimes they give me to just do it. Just do it. Don't think about it. Don't ask me. Don't just do it.
So that was
in this case.
Was this a lot on the day that you were doing a lot of these things, or was it like carefully storyboarded and planned out that way?
It was planned out, but sometimes on the day, you're just coming and, okay, let's try to do this today. Okay, let's try to do this. But most of the time, planning, rehearsing, doing a previs, he's watching it, like it, don't like it, go and do something else, something more, or just remove this, put some other stuff. So that's how it was all the time. But I mean, it was like, for me, it was great experience, because again, they give me the freedom. It was like most of the previous I did, it was like a copy paste with the camera angles, with everything. They didn't change anything.
Wow.
It was, for me, it's a lot, you know.
Shot for
shot. Everyone, it's just, I cannot be more happy about it. And proud, of course, because
It's incredible.
It is.
Nice. And so I know you said there was a lot of action that y'all did not have in the final cut. Are you a part of that editing process too for those action sequences?
No, it's the director, he used to be a stunt guy. He's very, very good with stunts.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he understands stunts. He understands so well stunts.
That's amazing.
So that's maybe one of the reasons he's doing that kind of actions in India. All editing and everything's done by them.
So he was very easy to communicate with.
Very, super easy. Super easy. It was, again, the best experience ever for me. And I've been doing for 25 years this. I have more than 120 movies. But this one was totally different.
Nice. And so I think we also wanted to ask about some specific scenes here. Darren, are you okay to jump into this portion?
Yeah.
వాళ్ళకి ఏమైనా రెండు కొమ్ములు ఉంటాయా ఒక కాపర్ ఉంటాడు
I don't know how much you had to do with that first police station fight scene with Ram and the 1 versus 1,000 fight scene with all the guys at the beginning, his introduction. Yeah, we wanted to get a breakdown of that, I guess, like, and your process going into that first.
So when they start doing the choreography, I wasn't there. I was in the middle. That's where I was the action camera.
Oh, that's really?
That's the handheld camera inside of the crowd and everything. It's me.
Oh, awesome. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, there's so many moments in there that are really, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like, of course, because from my perspective and my camera movements and everything, we changed some stuff, but most of the stuff, it was create sometimes on the day. Some things were creating on the day sometimes, but most of the choreography was done by Solomon during the shoot.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. During the shoot.
That's incredible.
But the guys did a great job. Everyone just did a great job.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So, compared to, I know there's oftentimes this conversation about sort of Hong Kong style action filmmaking, where it's very much on the fly and make it up as you go, versus the Western or American Hollywood style, which is very pre-planned and a lot of storyboarding and previs. Was your experience here somewhere in between, or was it more towards that Hong Kong figure it out as you go style?
How can I say? I'm not sure that it's a Hong Kong style, but we were trying to plan. More like a plan, more was staying like a Hollywood plan, like with storyboard, with previs, with, you know, that's it pretty much. I mean, Hollywood. Instead of
that scene in there where you have that dog pile of people crowding him, and you can barely see the sky, and it's just, you're inside that cave of people. I don't know. Were you the one operating during that scene?
The whole, yeah. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. What was that like? Because it's such a unique scene where he's like grabbing this dude's finger and like pulling him away and then like punching this guy. Like, I've never seen anything like that before. And I was wondering, like, how did that idea formulate? Was it kind of like on the day, or did you guys kind of have an idea? And then like the action with the camera too, like the movements that you did when you were in there. I really like that as well.
it was actually because, again, what I said, first of all, the sun was killing us. Second of all, the crowd was crazy. You cannot control the crowd. And it was really hard, especially when you are with the, again, with the camera inside between them. And for this particular scene, it was like, you can see only this, right?
Yeah.
But behind me, they pushing me, they fighting, they doing like some crazy stuff.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. And it sometimes was hard to move with the camera, left, right, up and down. And all the time I need to do something, right? I need to move. I need to get the right timing. I need to do something. I need to, this guy need to open, that guy need to close it, you know? Sometimes it was very, very hard to do it. But sometimes it was just happening just like this. Just like maybe a little luck sometimes, but it was a well prepared. We were well prepared for this.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were really there, like huddled underneath all those guys.
Underneath with the camera, with everything. It was so, and at the dust, oh my God.
Wow.
It was so much dust. We couldn't, we were coughing like a, it was so much dust. So much dust. Crazy.
So I think a lot of people would say like, replicating that many people was like CGI or something like that, but it sounds like it was a lot of it was done practically. Like you really had that giant crowd there just doing all those motions and pushing everybody around. Yeah, like I remember some of those wide shots too, where you can kind of like see him in the crowd and you could see everybody pushing him one way, but you still see him like in there, like he's somewhere in there. That was incredible to me as well, just
it
how you
was,
could point
was.
Him inside all those people.
Again, the director and the DOP, they're so creative. So, and they both work for so many years together, for so many years. So they know each other so well. And they create something really, 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 really great.
Yeah. When you yell cut on a set like that, does everybody just stop moving? Or is it kind of like...
It's actually, it's actually, there is a microphone.
Okay.
The mic with like crazy 10 speakers all around the set. So you can hear the cut.
Wow. Yeah.
Makes sense.
And that sequence where they're all rolling down the rocks when he's on that tower and they're all rolling down the rocks. I'm assuming, did the stuntmen just take that and they kind of just went down and you got the slow-mo shots of them doing that? Or were like obviously they were padded up a little bit.
Actually, it was the whole set was soft.
Oh, so really? Okay.
It was nice.
That's awesome.
It was nice. It was
for sure.
Yeah.
And I know there was some fire in this sequence as well. Was there CG flames for that portion, or did you have some practical on set?
You talk about where this one, the stick falling down with
the slow mo stick. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a little fire for the reference, but then the rest the VFX guys they did. But there was a fire.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So it was were there any human beings on fire for this whole production?
Oh yeah, two guys. We put two guys. There was a when they start they both of them went into the forest.
Oh,
there was two guys who are in
Oh yeah, Auburn. Yeah, I do remember that final scene, right? Yeah,
yeah. Actually, that was interesting experience for me because when there, I asked them if the guys has costumes. They said we don't, but we have something like, and it was very interesting system of how they wrapping up with some clothes, and also it was very interesting. It's not like we have fire costumes, we have everything. You have underneath everything, but there was a little different. I was like, oh my God, guys, and you're going to be burn. And I was like, they were like, oh, no problem, Juji, don't worry. Yeah. I was like, don't worry, but I will be there. But nothing happened. It was everything went perfect.
Yeah, damn, that's incredible. And a lot of these action sequences, I know you have like a lot of like speed ramps, and then slow down. Is that like a specific conversation? Like you guys are like, this moment is going to be slow
and then this time we're going to speed this up, and then like you shoot it specifically for that, or you kind of like feel that out in the editing?
You know, they like slow-mo. Mm-hmm. They like slow-mo, so...
I got that sense, yeah.
You just go for slow-mo, and then when you feel it, you just ramp it and just like you speed it up or something. But most of the time you go for the slow-mo, and then you... Depends on the feeling of the fight or whatever they're doing, you just speed it up or something.
Yeah, gotcha. But, and it's also, it's all character driven a lot of the time too. So I really like the writing and story and character side of filmmaking and of action especially. And in the outpost fight scene, there's just him splashing his face with the water, and that's where you know, it's not a big crazy flip kick or anything like that. It's a little character beat where we're using that speed ramping, the slow motion.
It's like really
emphasize. And they're using a lot of air. They're using also a lot of air.
Okay.
So, do you remember when he put his leg on the ground?
And there
There was with the air. Right.
Oh, so they had like a blower or like some
blower.
Kind of... Oh wow, yeah. Nice.
Gotcha. Yeah, everything seems so elevated. Was there CG there too? Because I saw in some of the forest scenes, the leaves on the ground, seems like there might be some flourishes there that were CG.
For which sequence?
Like extra leaves and stuff like that is what you're talking about.
For example, because we shot here in Bulgaria, one of the sequence. I was a producer for the Bulgaria side. Okay. I'm also a line producer and producer for Bulgaria.
Oh, great. Awesome.
On this one. That's why I said like, and also when we were finishing the movie and then we were talking with the director and the producer and everyone, and they were like, at the end, they were like, okay, Juji, what you were in the movie, you start from like first they call me for Horse Master. First they call me for Horse Master. Then I went action camera, action director, line producer. I was like,
just constantly elevating throughout the film.
Constantly elevating, yes. But so we shot the sequence where Tiger chasing the other actor.
Yeah.
Beam. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
his intro sequence.
That was the intro sequence. Beam. It's a shot in Bulgaria.
Oh wow.
Here I can say there is not too much VFX, but there was some of the trees, some of the forest. But most of the, like, let's say 70% was the forest. Then 30% of CG.
Wow.
Gotcha.
And what was that like matching him and, you know, all the animals in that scene together?
So we were using here a dog. Mm-hmm. So the dog were like running, for example, as a wolf.
Oh, and really? Then, so they were trained to
matching to matching the speed and everything. So we had the dog here, trained dog who were like running the path, the camera following him. So it was like this.
Nice. And when there's a portion where he's just holding up the tiger as it's kind of laying on him for the final beats there, does he have something that he's pressing up against, it looks like?
There was a one guy in blue suit under the net.
Just the biggest guy you got.
Yes,
he was
7 foot tall.
He's a friend of mine. He's a basketball player. He's like six something. He's really tall guy.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. That's going to be is he also a stunt guy or is he just a basketball player?
No, he's just a basketball player and he watched the movie he watched the movie and he texted me and then he called me and he was like, "Brother, I saw myself." I was like, "Where?" He was like, "What do you mean where?" I forgot that he's the tiger. I was the tiger. I saw myself. I was the tiger.
He saw his like movements as the tiger.
Yes.
Wow, that's gonna be a fun awesome. Fact for life. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene is incredible. Like I remember like just how fast he was running in the forest. I don't know if you guys did any work with like practicals and like making him run faster,
or like trying to shoot it in ways to make him run faster, but it looks crazy.
Shoot it in ways to look faster. And he was running fast, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And the thing is, he was running barefoot.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the entire time.
The entire time he was running barefoot. But of course, we were cleaning every time we were doing some. But sometimes you cannot clean the whole forest.
Yeah. But
he did it great. He did great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He did great.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I love that sequence.
Great
intro sequence.
The pulley system with the net to hold.
Oh,
that was
the one where he's like pulling.
Is that something that's included in the script or something that comes through in the storyboarding and previous process? Just the physical setup of that scenario?
Mm-hmm.
It was on the script. And also there was a storyboard and the director, he showed how he's imagined to look like. And every time they were doing it perfect. Perfect camera angle. Everything was so perfect, the plan.
Wow, that's awesome.
it was.
Mike, do you want to touch on this bridge rescue sequence as well?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So again, I'm going to cut back to your Instagram profile that we looked at. Not too much, but a little bit. We saw some of your posts there. I saw one video of you kind of teaching some kids or playing around with some kids, doing some stunt work, showing them, you know, how to take hits or giving some hits. And then I'm watching this sequence and there's a little kid that's a main portion, the sort of focal point of the whole gag as they're trying to rescue this child. So what's it like from your perspective behind the scenes working with children as the focal point of a stunt?
So it's very hard to work with kids. And also, especially most of the kids, when we talk about action or something, they're so happy to do it. Mm-hmm. So happy to try something. You just... they're like, oh, yes, I want to do it. No, you cannot do it. No, please, I want to do it, you know? And it's a lot of time. It's just like I've been working on few projects with kids, and there was a one-to-one sequence. It's another movie. But there was a sequence when one kid, like 10 years old, he's climbing on the tree, and he's falling off the tree. And the same guy, because I was teaching him how to climb up and all this stuff, he was like, I can do it. I want to do it. I want to jump for that. I was like, no, you're a doctor. You cannot jump. No. I want to do it. I was like, they're willing to do it. Most of the kids, and they're very like, they enjoy the time with all these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hard, but also it's very easy and pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Probably very rewarding too.
Definitely.
Yeah, that goes back to the training for the martial arts or the judo instructing. Mm-hmm.
The club, yeah.
So it was the club. It's already almost 20 years old. 2004, my friend, who is the president of the club, he created the club with one friend of us who is from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And our club is called Shun Judo. And the name of Shun is the name of the guy, of the our Japanese friend. Mm-hmm. And before, when I was a kid, there was every 2 years, the Kodokan Judo Federation, every 2 years, they sending someone to teach us how to play good judo. And Shun, he came first time 2000, and he stayed for 2 years, and then he's supposed to leave, but then he stayed for two more years because he loved it. Mm-hmm. He loved Bulgaria. He didn't want to move. Wow. So, and before he left, they create this team. They create Shun Judo Club.
Mm.
And since then, the club exists. And I joined the club 2007, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Around 2007. First, I joined it just to help the coach, the main coach and the president, to just help him with the kids, to do a randori, to just nothing special. But then I was like, so happy to work with the kids. And he asked me if I want to be a coach. So I was like, of course. Anyway, I'm spending a lot of time in the dojo, so I would love to work with them. And yeah. That's how I start. That's it may be one of the best time I ever had in, it's like, with the kids in the dojo and teaching them something, and then you can see your work, how it affects them in the good way.
I did a lot of taekwondo instructing for kids and for adult classes as well. Yeah. It's super rewarding. And compared to the film work too, sometimes you'll work on different projects and it'll take you all these different places, which is great. And it keeps you busy and on your toes, but having that home, that second home to go to for the training or the instructing is key, I think.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's the only thing you can live in for the world, like to teach the kids something nice, something good. It's like,
It's really amazing to see them progressing. Like you see them learning and progressing and just getting better and then like mastering those skills. I think it's like what we said, it's like the most rewarding thing.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Yes.
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram at actionfilmmakingpodcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.